This is Fresh Air. Lawrence Walsh's 7-year investigation into the Iran-Contra affair ended this week with the publication of his final report. My guest Peter Kornbluh says the special prosecutor's report not only offers a thorough look at the Iran-Contra story, it's also the last major narrative on the inner workings of the national security apparatus in the Cold War era. Kornbluh is the co-editor of the Iran-Contra scandal, The Declassified History, which tells the story of the scandal through 100 of the most revealing secret documents. Kornbluh is a senior analyst with the National Security Archive, which uses the Freedom of Information Act to obtain secret government documents for scholars, journalists, and Congress. The Walsh Report concludes that both Ronald Reagan and George Bush knew about the Arms for Hostages deal, but Walsh is more critical of Bush than Reagan.
Walsh has bent over backwards to be magnanimous to Ronald Reagan. It's extraordinary. His report makes it clear that Reagan participated or acquiesced in the cover-up of his own actions with regards to the 1985 arms sales to Iran, which he had been told at the time by his own Secretary of Defense were illegal. Walsh's kind of very soft treatment of Reagan, his respectful treatment of the former president, is totally in contrast to the scathing attacks that Ronald Reagan and his lawyer and other members of Reagan's cabinet have launched on Lawrence Walsh, but we can talk about those in a second. In terms of George Bush, the Walsh Report makes it clear that Bush grossly misled the American public in 1986 and 1987 about his own knowledge of the Iran operations and the Contra operations. He ran for president in 1988 on the basis of denying that he knew anything about these operations, really. He said, "I was out of the loop on the Iran-Contra operations." And the Walsh Report proves once and for all that George Bush was in the room and in the loop as the Iran operations were being discussed and implemented, that he favored the Arms for Hostages transfers, and that he was a participant in the illicit effort to resupply the Contras in Nicaragua after Congress cut off all aid to the Contras and banned the United States from supporting them. I think where Walsh is particularly and overtly angry at George Bush, and rightfully so, is for the pardons. George Bush stepped in and obstructed Lawrence Walsh's investigation of Iran-Contra. He aborted the two trials that were pending in early 1993, that of Caspar Weinberger, the former Secretary of Defense, and a high CIA official, Duane Claridge. He also went ahead and pardoned four other Reagan administration officials who had pled guilty to both federal and misdemeanor crimes. And in so doing, he terminated abruptly Walsh's investigation and prevented the American public from hearing the full body of evidence about the cover-up in the White House that certainly would have come out at the Weinberger trial. And Walsh's point is that there was nothing in the public interest of doing this, that Bush was doing this for self-serving reasons. It meant that he would not have to testify after his presidency ended, and that his own role in the scandal would not be revealed. In fact, now it has been revealed in the Walsh Report.
Walsh says that the investigation of Bush was regrettably incomplete. What information did he hope to get that he hasn't gotten?
You know, George Bush concealed relevant documents from the congressional and Lawrence Walsh's investigators. He was asked in 1987 to turn over all relevant personal and professional documents relating to Iran-Contra. George Bush knew full well that he had dictated notes on the day-by-day meetings that were taking place in the White House as the Iran-Contra scandal unraveled, and yet he withheld those notes from Lawrence Walsh and Congress until 1992, after the election had already taken place and the statute of limitations on concealing evidence had run out. Now, let me just say that one of the most interesting things in the Walsh Report is his discussion of the Bush diaries. Bush released his diaries a year ago, this week, as a matter of fact, but he had already gone through them and taken out parts that he didn't want anybody to see. He claimed at the time, through his lawyer, Griffin Bell, that those sections of the diaries were not relevant. They had nothing to do with Iran-Contra. But now we know from the Walsh Report that, in fact, there was a diary entry where Bush wrote, or better said, dictated into his dictaphone, that he had just discovered that George Shultz, the Secretary of State, and he's writing this now in November, December of 1986, that George Shultz, the diary says, had taken 700 pages of contemporaneous notes on the meetings involving Iran-Contra and was going to turn those over to congressional investigators, as he had been asked to do under the law. And George Bush dictates, "I'm appalled that he kept such notes. I certainly would not turn my notes over to investigators." And that's, I think, a very important and revealing passage about the cover-up that I think Walsh has revealed Bush participated in.
Walsh has concluded that President Reagan's impeachment should have been considered. On what grounds?
On the grounds that Ronald Reagan deliberately participated in and acquiesced to a cover-up of his own role in the 1985 arms shipments to Iran, which he and his men both knew and believed to have been illegal. Walsh uncovered evidence in the form of contemporaneous notes taken at the meetings that Reagan attended in November of 1986 after the story of these arms sales broke, and as the president and his men were trying to come up with how this would be responded to, how it would be presented to the American public, those notes showed that a cover-up was formed. Meese presented the facts to the American public on November 25th, 1986, saying the president did not know about these arms shipments. In fact, these are shipments that were conducted by Israel, not by the United States. That was factually false, and the evidence that Walsh uncovered showed that the president did know and was a participant in the meetings to cover up this initiative. It is on that grounds, a Watergate-style cover-up, even a cover-up that I would argue goes beyond Watergate in its importance, that Walsh suggested that had Congress had the evidence in 1987, they might have considered impeachment against Ronald Reagan.
If you're just joining us, my guest is Peter Kornbluh. He's a senior analyst with the National Security Archive and co-editor of the book The Iran-Contra Scandal, The Declassified History, which tells the story of the scandal through documents that the archive has gotten declassified over the years. We're going to take a short break and then talk some more. This is Fresh Air. Back with Peter Kornbluh of the National Security Archive, a group that specializes in declassifying government documents. And he's the co-editor of the Iran-Contra Scandal, The Declassified History. Walsh has gotten his share of criticisms for how he conducted this investigation. He's been criticized for spending too much money, about $40 million, for taking too long, 7 years, and for finally not having really put in anyone behind bars except one person who wasn't even a key figure. Senator Dole said, "Walsh's witch hunt is a case study in prosecutorial abuse and excess." Do you share those criticisms of Walsh? Do you think that he took too long or spent too much money or didn't get enough done?
I don't share those criticisms. And Terry, I can tell you there were really three basic reasons for the costs and the length of Walsh's investigation. The first one is that he faced a wall of cover-up, and it was hard to break through that wall. It took time. Major pieces of evidence were concealed until 1992, almost 6 years after the scandal broke. The second major reason his investigation took so long is because Congress had given immunity to the key figures in the scandal, John Poindexter, Oliver North, and others. And Walsh successfully tried these two men. He won 3 out of 12 charges against Oliver North, 5 out of 5 charges against John Poindexter. But unfortunately, those convictions were reversed on appeal because they had essentially both admitted to this wrongdoing under immunity in their testimony before Congress. That was Congress's mistake, I would argue, not Walsh's, in terms of the law. And the third reason is President Bush's obstruction of Walsh's investigation and his decision to abort 3 of the trials that Walsh had spent more than 3 years preparing for. Those trials were the 1989 trial of CIA station chief in Costa Rica, Joseph Fernandez. Walsh had spent a year preparing to bring this to trial on the eve of sitting a jury. The Bush administration decided not to release documents that the judge had determined were necessary for the defense in this case, and the judge threw out the charges. 2 other trials, that of Caspar Weinberger and Duane Claridge, Bush aborted by giving preemptive pardons on Christmas Eve 1992.
The special prosecutor law has expired, though it may be revived by Congress. What powers did the special prosecutor, Laura, give, and how is its absence affecting us now?
Well, its absence has prevented the Republicans from being able to force through a new independent counsel quickly to investigate President Clinton and the Whitewater scandal. But more importantly, the debate over reenacting the independent counsel statute has focused largely on making it a weaker statute. And I think that what Lawrence Walsh's experience shows is that the Independent Counsel Act has to be strengthened. It has to be strengthened to give an independent counsel additional powers when it comes to criminality conducted under the guise of national security, because national security involves classified information, and Walsh turned out to be not independent but dependent on the very agencies that he was investigating in order to obtain the declassification of evidence that needed to be used for criminal prosecutions. Because that was a factor, and because the Reagan administration and the Bush administration did not cooperate in that declassification, in fact, obstructed that declassification of evidence, Walsh was not able to charge anybody with the core of the scandal, that is, the diversion of funds between the Iran operations and the Contra operations. He indicted North and Poindexter on charges relating to the diversion, but he had to drop those charges because the Reagan administration would not release the documentation. Similarly, in the case of Joe Fernandez, the CIA station chief, that trial was aborted because the Bush administration would not declassify the documents. So in the future, if we are going to have expedient independent counsel investigations and prosecutions relating to national security crimes, we are going to have a stronger independent counsel law.
Tell us about the document you chose for the cover of your book on the declassified history of the Iran-Contra scandal and why that document is so revealing.
That document is verbatim notes of a June 25, 1984 meeting of the National Security Planning Group, the highest level national security decision-making body in the Reagan administration. Here is a meeting, according to these notes, with the president, the vice president, secretary of state, the secretary of defense. These are verbatim minutes, a virtual transcript. It allows the reader to be a fly on the wall of the inner sanctum of a major national security meeting at which it was discussed how the Reagan administration was going to circumvent the congressional ban on aid to the Contras by going to third countries and asking them to become the financiers of this illicit covert war in Central America. And you have the president saying we should do this, and you have Secretary of State Shultz saying to the President of the United States, Mr. President, that could be an impeachable offense. And then you have the President of the United States concluding the meeting by saying to everybody, this is a sensitive issue. Don't anybody leak this issue. If anybody leaks it, we will be hanging from our thumbs in front of the White House waiting to find out who did it. That's the type of candid look into the inner sanctum of the national security establishment, if you will, that you can get out of these documents.
I think the popular view of Iran-Contra early on was that the scandal was the responsibility of a shadow government created by subordinate officers. Does the Walsh Report change that?
It certainly does. The Walsh Report sets the record straight for the verdict of history, I would argue. It states that, in fact, that was the popular myth about Iran-Contra, that a, quote, cabal of zealots, unquote, as Congress put it in its 1987 report, operating out of the basement of the White House, ran these operations unbeknownst to the President of the United States, who was somewhat befuddled about what was really going on. The Walsh Report changes that history once and for all. It shows that the Iran and Contra operations were directed and authorized by the President of the United States, implemented with his knowledge, as well as that the cover-up of these operations was also directed and acquiesced to by the President of the United States. This was not a rogue elephant operation. This was an operation run at the highest levels of the Reagan White House. That is very, very important history. What we do with that history to prevent this from happening again is up to us.
Peter Kornbluh is co-editor of the Iran-Contra scandal, The Declassified History, published by the New Press. This is Fresh Air.